On this week's 51%, we sit down with Dr. Margot Lowy to discuss her book Maternal Ambivalence and learn how to navigate the conflicting emotions that come with motherhood.
Ambivalence is that you're really connected with your child, but you're struggling with all these feelings. It's really being able to look at all these feelings, to think about them, and to be compassionate with oneself about them.
I'm Jessie King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jessie King. Mother's Day is May 11th. Now, I can't speak from personal experience, but I am told that parenting comes with a lot of conflicting emotions, which, no duh, of course it does. But voicing the more negative feelings is still a taboo for moms, even as Gen Z starts to have kids and more women talk about their experiences online. She's not even a mom, but even pop star Chapel Roan got chewed up online when she said in an interview that all her friends with kids are, quote, in hell. But our main guest today says motherhood is not a black and white, wholly good or bad experience, and it's a good thing more women are sharing their feelings. Dr. Margot Lowy is a psychotherapist and mom of three whose research focuses on motherhood. She says the plans and expectations we set for ourselves rarely line up with reality, and she wants to help moms make peace with that by embracing the title of her new book, Maternal Ambivalence. Now, to be clear, maternal ambivalence doesn't mean you don't love your child. It's just acknowledging the positive and negative emotions of motherhood. It's understanding that being a mom is both wonderful and hard, and if you're not enjoying it at any given moment, that's okay. But knowing that and feeling that are two different things, and given the taboos around motherhood, the latter takes some practice. So I recently spoke with Lowy for some tips.
The thing about maternal ambivalence is that ambivalence is a misunderstood term. It's confused with the notion of indifference. Ambivalence is the opposite. Ambivalence is that you're really connected with your child, but you're struggling with all these feelings. And that's really what the difference is. And it's also sometimes people think that ambivalence is a blending of feeling. It's not a blending because each feeling has its part and is very important. So it's really being able to look at all these feelings, to think about them, and to try and understand them, and to accept them, and to be compassionate with oneself about them. It's the notion of not, I feel sad or happy, or I feel shame or relief. It isn't about that. It's the ability to say and for a mother to be able to express all her feelings, like, okay, I am happy and I'm a bit sad at the moment. I'm angry and I'm over the moon about something. And so it's really the notion of not being binary, not having one or the other. And in mothering, of course, there's many interactions, many feelings at any one second. And usually we're kind of being taught from time immemorial that a mother needs to be selfless, she needs to be there all the time for her child, that she can't really have feelings that aren't about fully fledged devotion and love. And of course, we know that this isn't really true, but that's what we start with. So my work is about encouraging mothers to accept and work with all their feelings and to put value on the dark feelings.
So just to be totally clear, I don't have any kids myself, but I am at an age where a lot of the women around me are starting to think about that. I just don't want to make any assumptions about what moms experience or feel. When you say darker feelings, what exactly do you mean by that? What are some examples and situations where moms might have those feelings alongside happier ones?
Well, I guess things like guilt, shame, sadness, all those feelings that we don't really talk about, even tiredness, like even fatigue. And it's not really taken that seriously. But you know what? I'll give you a little example that I often use. There's a new mum at the park with her toddler and her newborn baby. And she says to the toddler, "Just wait a second. I've got to change the diaper. I'll be back to and we'll play in a second." They're near the slide. She's dealing with the baby, and she just has a feeling that something is not right. She looks up, and the toddler's at the top of the slide. So her heart is like panicked. She manages to hold herself together. She leaves the baby and she walks up the slide very slowly, very carefully, and grabs her child. He's safe. And at this moment, she's like seized with so many feelings. She's, of course, totally relieved because she had in her mind what would happen if my child fell down. What could happen to him? What's going to happen to our future? All those things go through the mother's mind when something like this happens. And at that moment, when there's extreme love, there's also anger and resentment and like feelings of, how could you do this to me? It's like, this is just terrible. And what happens with her is all these feelings, she acknowledges them and they actually melt and they make her love stronger. They strengthen her love. So this is what I mean about maternal ambivalence. It's something that we don't really talk about, we don't really understand, but it's about getting together and gathering all one's feelings and finding value in the ones that are difficult, the ones that we don't like to face. And I think there's a whole part of the maternal language that we don't use because we don't have a language to really talk about these feelings in a way that's safe. Mums have a really high bar. Society gives them a high bar, and ourselves, we have a high bar. We all, there's this, I did quite a bit of work on this notion of a perfect mother. And we want to be perfect mothers, but it actually doesn't exist. And it's not human. It's human to be able to make mistakes and repair them. And this is another notion that I talk about with mothering. Mothering is making mistakes, repairing them, making mistakes, repairing them. And that's how we learn. But who's told that? It's really, really interesting.
You mentioned you want to help moms navigate this better. How do you practice maternal ambivalence? I guess, like, where do you start?
I think it starts if, as a mum, you can create a thinking space before you act. Like, I tell a story in my book about a mum who's getting ready to take her kids to school. It's the early morning rush. It's like it's 8 a.m. She's driving her kids to school. She's got three. She's got a boy who's about 10, a girl who's about six, and a toddler. So her time in the morning is very, very rushed. So anyway, the morning's going all right. They're sitting down, everyone's having breakfast. It's fairly calm. And then she's in her head, she's thinking, I'm going to drop the two off to school. Then I'm going to go to the store and get a few things. Then I'm going to put the baby to bed at 12 so I can do my work Zoom. Everything's in order. I'm happy. Suddenly, she turns around. The little girl who's six has dropped all her milk over her brother's project. So, like, there's bedlam because the project is ready. He's been working on it. And the mother, like, is like, it's terrible. So, what she does, she manages to gather herself and to wipe the project off, and it's okay. And then to change her daughter to grab the baby and get in the car. And she's kind of like, the anxiety level is quite high. And then she's in the car. And then she realizes, yeah, it actually worked. It did actually work. And then in the car, she's joking and having a little fun and telling her kids a story about something that happened to her. And she had all the milk over her jeans. But why I'm telling this story to you is that because the mother was able to learn from this experience. And so your question, how do we learn, is we make mistakes. And sometimes, we don't, sometimes we learn from the mistakes and it's better. And the mother in the car is thinking, well, last week a similar thing happened and it was terrible. This week it's better. Maybe next week it'll be not so great again. But if she does one out of three or one out of 10, she can learn from it. So that's one way mums can learn, to just think about their experiences and to be compassionate with themselves. You know, it's hard. We don't get a rule book for this. And the other thing is, if a mum can surround herself by people that are supportive and that don't judge her, whether it's a partner, which is great if there's a partner around that can help her take a bit of the load off her and really listen to her. Listen to what her day is like. Give respect to this job, which is probably the hardest job in the world. And we're not given, we don't know what we're doing most of the time. And also, you know, other mothers, you know, to sit in a circle with other mothers and be able to be a bit vulnerable and to say, I had a crappy morning because this happens. And another mother says, well, my morning was like this. And to surround oneself with people that gives you energy, not people that take your energy away or deflate you. And we all know what it's like when we've got people around that are like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, I think there's another very important aspect of this is to look at how you were mothered and not to necessarily do it exactly the same, to kind of claim your mothering. Because I think what we do most of the time is we either do exactly the same or we do the opposite, which is also means we're doing exactly the same. So really to have a bit of thought about how we were mothered and to think about, you know, what things would I like to be different, but also to be flowing and fluid, not to have a plan. And this goes back to what you were talking about. You said you haven't had children yet, and you're kind of in the stage of people are starting to think about it. I think that during pregnancy, we get a really good idea about maternal ambivalence because if a pregnancy, one has ideals about what a pregnancy, particularly a first pregnancy, might be, that it's going to be wonderful. You're going to be feeling wonderful. You're going to bond with this baby. You're going to be glowing. It's going to be just fantastic. It's something that you decided with your partner. You've got all these dreams and hopes. And often when you're pregnant, not like that. You might be throwing up. You might be exhausted. You mightn't be able to work. You might just be flat out. And you've kind of got to manage this. And this, I think what this experience does is it prepares you for mothering because you actually realize that it's not necessarily going to be your way anymore. If a mother is mindful about this while she's pregnant, she will get the message that it's not about her, but it's also being able to flow with it and to maybe, and this also, of course, applies with mothering, to be a bit humorous about it. When I was doing my, I've got, this is my second book, the one I've just written. I did another book called The Maternal Experience, and that was a lot more, that was, this second book is much more conversational. And with the first book, I used to find my research, I used film. And I want to tell all your listeners, there's a fantastic French movie called A Happy Event. The French are great at this. And it talks about the mother's first year of being a mum and her pregnancy. And a happy event is a play on words because, of course, it's happy, but there's a lot about it that's not happy. And I think this film, you can probably get it maybe on Netflix. It's old, it's like 2010, maybe, or something, but it's such a great, like, preparation because it's humorous. But it's also really difficult because the mum becomes lonely. She really wanted this baby desperately, but she really comes to terms with what it is. And in a sense, her expectations about mothering are just up there, and it's just not what it is. But if, and I think any kind of film, reading, theatre, TV series, if you can look at these from the view of a mother and of ambivalence and looking at all the different sides, I think that can prepare one for mothering. It's fantastic.
Does maternal ambivalence look different at different stages of motherhood, like, when you and your child get older?
I think when it's a newborn, It's very, very hands-on. And your resources, your physical resources, can be depleted often because you're not sleeping properly. You've got heightened awareness. You're worried, is the baby all right? It's just a whole new experience that you can't even imagine. And it's on you. This baby, the burden of responsibility is now on you. No matter if you've got a supportive partner or mum or friend, that's wonderful, but it's actually on you. And so it's a huge shift from being able to really be free and do what you want. I mean, before, you can go for a walk when you feel like it. You can go out for dinner. You can go to a movie. You can have a sleep when you feel like it. That finishes. So there's this feeling of often of, what's happening. It's what I call mothering, a messy, interrupted experience. We weren't told that either, but that's exactly what it is. It's messy. It's messy with if you're feeding, if you're not feeding, there's the baby's chucking, you're changing diapers, you're messy yourself, because how can you have a newborn and be anything but messy? And it's interrupted. Your life is interrupted. So you're just adapting and adjusting to this little human. But when that human little baby falls asleep, or the baby has had been fed and the baby's eyes flutter and you get this look of contentment, you melt. That's what maternal ambivalence is. It's like all these things together, and they're all valuable. I mean, okay, new mothering is difficult, but when you get that smile or when you get that hug, it's wonderful. And that's what I mean. And of course, as you get older, yeah, as the child gets older, it changes. One thinks about the first day that you drop your child to kindergarten. There's that feeling of, oh, it's wonderful. My child's finally getting a bit older. I've got a bit of free time. But at the same time, like, you're in shock, especially with the first one. Are they going to be all right? Do they still need me, or aren't they going to need me anymore? There's so many feelings, and the difficult feelings. And there's always that feeling, I think, of, after you pick up your child, when you pick up your child the first day after school, and that feeling of when you see that child and you know that that child's been okay and they've grown up during that day and you've had to grow up with them. This is the other thing. And that's why I like your question, because being a mother, it's not us teaching our children. Our children are teaching us all the time. And then when your children become adults, it does, I think it shifts when you're not, when you haven't got the hands on. And I'll just go back a bit. When they're teenagers or around that age and older, it's not as much physical care, it's an emotional caring. And you really need to be able to lean in to your emotions and really understand, because with a baby, you can get the feeling of the baby's under your control in a sense. But when once they start to move out, it's a different thing, and there needs to be flow, and you need to think. And of course, they're kind of often, they're fighting with you. And that's how they build their identity. You can get angry and frustrated. And if one can develop a space to think before speaking, I call it responding rather than reacting. If you can do that one time out of 10 to start, that's a great tool, and it's hard. But it's also when one does something wrong, make a mistake, we need to be able to think about it. Think about what it was about. Talk about it to ourselves, to our partner, to our friend, and also approach our child and admit, I haven't been a mother of a 16-year-old before, or I've got four kids or three kids and it's hard for me and I'm trying to balance. Just to be open about that, about one's struggle as a mother. And I think that really helps. That really helps the child, because your children, you can't get away with anything. They pick up on everything. You can't pretend with them. So if one can be honest with one's children about how one feels, then they can be more honest, because you model that.
Is there a such thing as paternal ambivalence? Do we see fathers having similar taboos or these emotional tug of wars?
Apparently there is. I haven't studied it, but I'm sure. I think, I mean, it's different because the mother is usually the one that cares for most of the child, and usually the mother has gone through the pregnancy, has made the decisions often about feeding, not feeding. But yeah, apparent, yeah, I think fathers do, and I hope someone does that study. And I also think that currently fathers are a lot more involved with their children. But you see fathers with their children a lot more than in my day. And I think it's actually about the mother being able to let go of her child and to allow the father to father the way that he wants, and not to try and say, you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way, just to also be in the flow there and let them make their mistakes.
Well, Dr. Lowy, thanks so much for taking the time. Is there anything that you hope readers most take away from your book about mothering?
It's loving and it's bitter. And let's be able to name those. And let's not be taken over by the maternal ideal. And let's be truthful about it in a space that we can be truthful. And what I really want is I want to start this conversation. I don't have the answers. I've studied it and I've written some books, but I certainly don't have all the answers. And I think it's particularly tough these days. I think the social media, which invades all, all our lives, particularly young mothers. I think we have to be, it can be a really good tool of bringing people together, but I think we need to be mindful that some people will post things that are not really life. You know, a mother arriving at school 8 o'clock in the morning, fully coiffed and dressed and everything, when everyone else is like coming in and just staying jeans. And, I think that we need to be mindful about what the truth is and to really flow with mothering. Perfection does not exist for mothering.
Dr. Margot Lowy is a psychotherapist whose research focuses on motherhood. Her latest book is Maternal Ambivalence: The Loving Moments and Bitter Truths of Motherhood. It's out now through Post Hill Press. You can learn more about Margot and her work at drmargotlowy.com. Dr. Lowy, thanks again.
Really good to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Lastly, in Massachusetts, one of the state's oldest nonprofits is celebrating its 160th birthday. Created in the wake of the Civil War, Springfield-based Helix Human Services is devoted to aiding children and families. WAMC's James Palialagopoulos spoke with those who keep the mission going.
It was standing room only at the organization's Sherman Street office as it marked another year of providing therapeutic and educational services across the state. Born out of Springfield, Helix now operates from the Berkshires to the Cape. Its first president was Rachel Merriam, wife of dictionary publisher Charles Merriam of Merriam-Webster fame. It was founded as what was then the Home for Friendless Women and Children, supporting women and children struggling in the wake of the Civil War, says CEO Mark Paglia. That mission never stopped, and following expansions and a few name changes, Helix now serves about 1,000 children and families annually, from family care to foster care.
We offer them more than just recovery. We offer them a path to discover their inner strength and confidence to face life's challenges. Rachel Merriam started this work with a simple, powerful belief that every child deserves hope, healing, and a chance for a brighter future. That spirit lives on everything we do today.
With a staff of about 150, the organization's outreach ranges from a family wellness center in Holyoke to its Mill Pond schools in the Berkshires and Springfield, serving students with social, emotional, and/or behavioral challenges from kindergarten through age 22. There's also its foster care program and youth residential programs, including facilities for boys, girls, and youth who identify within the LGBTQIA+ community, its website says. The boys' facility, the cottage residential program, is right next to the Sherman Street office, a sort of cottage-styled house outfitted for males ages 6 through 13. As Chief External Relations Officer Jamilka Noge tells WAMC, many of the kids who come to Helix often require special kinds of care, whether it's due to trauma, disabilities, or other factors.
We work daily with children who are very difficult, who have very difficult behaviors, and you need a lot of patience. But most of all, in my opinion, you need a lot of empathy. We have to be empathetic to what our children and families have gone through, right? There is a very, very big need in mental health, not only here in Springfield, but basically in our nation. Our staff are key.
It's work that leads to moments like a recent run-in Nogay says she had with a former client. It ended with hugs after the CERO recognized a food delivery driver who, after her time with Helix, ended up attending college at AIC and is now a nurse, with some meal delivery work on the side. It's one of the more rewarding experiences that come with the job, says Julie Fabry-Norton, who serves as a health coordinator for the residential programs. Having been with the organization for 31 years, she tells WAMC working with the kids who come through the organization is the best part of the job.
A lot of these kids come to us abused and neglected, and we make sure that they get all caught up on everything that they need, you know, whether that's the doctor, the dentist, psychiatric, you know, anything that these kids need. I've seen a lot of kids come in here in need of quite a bit, and by the time we get them to leave the program, they're ready to go out into the community and go back home or be on their own or and I have, as they said earlier, I've had a few children come back and say those words, thank you for taking care of me, and that just really chokes me up every time that happens.
The organization shows no sign of stopping. State contracts and state supports have led to about $5.6 million in revenue last year alone, according to Helix's 2024 annual report. When all is said and done, revenue and expenses break even at about $10.4 million apiece. The work earned recognition from the U.S. Senate, State Senate, and city councilors and legislative staffers presenting certificates to mark 160 years. Among the officials, Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno.
God bless the staff that you have here, the patience and caring that you show, and the nurturing and the tough love at times that you have to show. And to the children that are here, how despicable it is that someone could be so abusive to our young people and what they've had to see or deal with through their eyes. And each and every one of you give that confidence to them, that they're going to be okay, that you're going to be able to work through this and get back on your feet and move forward. And you can't put a price tag on that.
Reporting from Springfield, this is James Polyoligopoulos at WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University.
Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King, 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. The nightmare down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. Lost my cool, no electricity. Hot rain on the concrete, sweet bells in little.